Okay, so oh, that's better. Is it better? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so as I said, I will be discussing the geometry of heterotic string compactifications and how solutions of these theories are connected to each other by geometric transitions. So the context, so I'm going to be working with a 10-dimensional heterotic string theory compactified compactified on a 6-dimensional manifold, Riemannian manifold, which I'm going to call X. So, and heterotic strings come with a vector bundle, so the notation, vector bundle V, so the notation I'm going to use is this. So V is a vector bundle on X. And what I want, so this will look like this is actually a very old question, right? So what I want is compactifications to 4 dimensions, of course, such that the 4-dimensional manifold space-time is maximally symmetric, and also that we preserve at least one supersymmetry in 4 dimensions. Of course, this question was discussed in the mid-80s. It was particularly in 1986, first by Strominger and by Hall. And so I'm going to start, so this is 25 years old at least. So I'm going to start, so the plan, right, by discussing the geometry, right? The geometry of X, right? So this is really a review, what's in there? A review. And a little bit, I will tell you a little bit about this bundle, right? And this, of course, we want the geometry. Of course, we know that the geometry of G and B will be strongly constrained by these conditions. I don't want to focus in this talk in constructing examples, right? What I want to do instead is to discuss a class of manifolds that can occur and how they are connected. They are connected by, they're connected to each other by geometric transitions. Transitions, in particular, I will discuss flops, and you have time, the quantifold transitions, and hopefully we will learn a little bit about moduli spaces. Again, just a little bit. So, again, time permitting, and as you will see actually along the whole talk, is that there are tons of open problems. There are lots in this context. I mean, let me just to mention one in these general compactifications. I mean, of course we know that Calabi-Yau compactifications are a solution, but they have no flux. So the general compactification with flux is something that is still a bit mysterious, and we have no clue what the massless spectrum is, for example. So how do I do this? Okay. So let me start with the geometry, discussing, reviewing the geometry. Right. So of course we have to start by recalling. This is the one that doesn't work. Okay. Okay. So the geometry. So let's start by recalling the massless spectrum, the ten-dimensional. Dimensional massless spectrum. Right, so we have bosons, of course, and fermions, and we have a metric. We have a dilaton. We have a totally antisymmetric three tensor, which is what we normally call the flux. And we have FMN, which is the curvature of a gauge field, right? And of course, we have also the fermions. Right, the gravitino, the dilatino, and the gluinos. Right, so what? So as I said, I want to consider compactifications on a four-dimensional manifold times a six-dimensional manifold. This is, therefore, will be space-time. And the requirement that this is maximally symmetric in the heterozygous strain, and that one supersymmetry is preserved, says that M4, so we'll discuss the constraints on M4 first. M4 has to be Minkowski. And moreover, the dilaton can depend only on the coordinates of the internal manifold. So this is, the coordinates will be x1, et cetera, to x6. And h, the only components of h that are non-zero are the internal components, right? M and p will take values from 1 to 6. And depend only on x2. So far, again, still in those old papers. So how about the constraints on x? Right, so the constraints on x. OK. Sorry? Yes, you could. That's actually an interesting question. I don't know what at the time they did. But what happens is that if you require maximally supersymmetric solution, you cannot have the sitter anti the sitter. Right? You can relax that condition, but then. Right? That, in fact, some people have. And I know, for example, Andre Lucas. Sorry?
If you get fermion condensates, then you can have also ideas.
That's
a solution.
Yeah, right. So,
but so, with classical bosonic background, no.
Yeah. So you can have, for example, instead of requiring maximal supersymmetry, you can require you have maximal symmetry. You can require to have, you can ask what happens if you have a domain wall, and then you have all the interesting solutions. And Ray Lucas and his students have discussed that among other people. So you're stuck with this in this context, yeah, which is what it is. So this got a bit. It's very tempting to try to play with that question. Something you have to relax something about. Particularly, you can think what happens if you relax a little bit about the supersymmetry condition. But it then becomes very complicated. And you ask for solutions with anti-de Sitter. But anyway, so this can go on for that. So let me continue with the conditions on X. So what happens first is that there is a spinor. You have to have a spinor, right? In six dimensions on X that is nowhere vanishing, globally well defined. Globally well defined, which is covariantly constant. Is covariantly constant with respect to a connection that I'm going to call nabla B, which is a connection with torsion, and by this with no other name, I mean the Levi-Civita connection, and H is of course this H here. So acting on the spinor, what you have is the nabla B on eta is zero, and in terms of the Levi-Civita connection, now M plus a term that is part of the spin connection right, and these gammas are the gamma matrices in six dimensions right. So this is totally, you can interpret the flux, if you like, as a totally skew-symmetric torsion. Okay. Equivalently, that torsion, I mean, the torsion is defined as the anti-symmetric part of the gamma symbols, right? So this is, in this case, this distortion is just H, and with an index upstairs. So that is that the constraints on X due to this are quite strong, as I said. So the existence of such n implies existence of such eta implies that we have non-degenerate covariantly constant forms, right? We have non-degenerate covariantly constant forms. Which can be constructed as bilinears in the spinors. So what we have is a two-form and a three-form. So this is actually a real two-form, and this is complex three-form, which are covariantly constant, so with respect to this connection. And with the metric, so with the metric G, one can construct an almost complex structure, J, M, N, which is a tensor. So what you do is that you take this and you raise an index with the matrix, with the metric, right? And you can prove that D squares 2 - 1. Right, so that's, by definition, almost complex structure. The way you prove this is by using fields rearrangement here. And supersymmetry also requires that these, the fact that this that little omega is covariantly constant implies that, first of all, that this complex structure is integrable. So J is an integrable complex structure, right? Integrability comes from the fact that this Nijenhuis tensor vanishes. And this is just one way of saying, complicated way of saying, that what we have is a complex manifold. Right. One can prove that this J is coherently constant, and because J is coherently constant and the omega is coherently constant, the metric is also coherently constant. So this connection is a metric connection that preserves a complex structure. And the reason I have a B here is because in mathematics, this B is called the Bismuth connection. Is the unique connection on a complex manifold that is metric compatible with a complex structure, and that is totally antisymmetric. Right. So this connection, what this is saying is that this connection is actually chosen by supersymmetry. In this complex structure, what you have is that this little omega is a 1-1 form. You can prove that this is a 3-0 form, right, and so on. Equivalently, I could have started in perhaps in more modern ways by saying that this is that X has an SU3 structure, but I actually wanted to be a little bit more explicit. So this is not the most, for those of you who know what that is, I mean, this is not the most general SU3 structure because X is complex.
Which would be non-zero?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, in terms of that, what happens, if you can rewrite this and say that the omega gives you some terms on the right-hand side here, and the capital omega gives you some terms on the right-hand side, and what you have here is precisely these torsion classes. And what happens is people remember forgetting, of course, W1 and W2, these classes are zero because it's complex.
Right.
And then you have a relation between W4 and W5. I think there's a 2 here. And then you have some other torsion class. I didn't want to go into this because it would be too long.
W3 is related to H2.
Yeah. W3 is the same. Yeah. I mean, one can work in this language, actually. It all comes from the variations. But from supersymmetry, it's just the same, it's equivalent, right? So what I want to do now is to write a couple of equations. Let's see. This is the one that doesn't work. Okay, so. The one above doesn't work either. So okay, so third. So again, also coming from supersymmetry, you can write, and using the fact that these forms are coherently constant, you can actually write explicit equations, differential equations for these forms. and that's what you have, right? So a complex manifold that satisfies this condition is called conformally balanced. Right? This is just the torsion in terms of this two form, right? And this equation is actually using the is equivalent to that one. So the word conformally comes from the fact that you have this factor here, right? So you can define omega tilde to be e to the minus pi omega, and then your equation would look the omega tilde, the omega equal to zero, and these manifolds are called balanced, right? So what this equation means is that there is a balance metric on these manifolds, which is given. So a remark, an important remark about this comes from these equations. So remark. So what happens if H is zero? This is the usual compactification. Then if H is zero means that d omega is zero, which implies that on top of that, a complex manifold with a non-degenerate two form that is closed, called Kähler. But on the other hand, if H is not zero, then X cannot be Kähler. And in the Kähler case, distortion, because H is zero, distortion just this connection just becomes the Levi-Civita connection. Okay, so this the condition that space is the most general compactification will not be Kähler, but instead will be conformally balanced, right? So this replaces this is the general condition, really, and it's not as constraining. I mean, if you can count the number of constraints that this has compared with this, I mean, this is much more constraining than this one. Okay. So let me return, finally. Now I'm going to return to the case, to the fact that we have this coherently constant spinor, right, with respect to this Bismuth connection. And I'm going to compute this usual computation, right, compute the commutator of the two connections here. And Juanita, of course, has to be zero. But that gives you an equation for the curvature. So the curvature, this is called the Ricci form of the Bismuth connection, right? It's going to be zero. And as a form, you can write it as 4. So this is the curvature with this B here. So it's a J QP time dxm dxn. And that has to vanish. And this is what replaces the condition that x has to be Ricci flat in the case in which h is 0. Right? So this vanishes. Right? So again, a remark, right? It's just to repeat what I just said. If because of this, right? If in the case in which x is Kähler, because this happens, then this is just your usual curvature, and the components of this tensor are the components of the Ricci tensor, right? So then you have the Ricci flat. Right. So, but using similar considerations that say that if you have a Kähler manifold that is Ricci flat, then it has vanished in first Chern class. This manifold, actually, in general, also has vanished in first Chern class. So So what we have now, so a summary of what I have said so far, is the following. Let's see, because I have another. Okay, so so as a summary, actually, let me put it here. Actually, so we might need this later. So the summary of what I have said so far, right, is that X is complex. It's a complex manifold which admits. And needs a conformally balanced metric. And has vanishing first chain class. In the math literature, these are beginning to be called Calabi-Yau torsion. I don't particularly like that name, but I will use it today so that I don't have to say all this every time I talk about one of these spaces. Okay? So, so that's, the, of course, that's not all. That's not complete, right? I still will have to remember that distortion is actually related to this omega, and that we have is zero. So that's what we have. And I want to tell you, I told you now about the geometry of X, and I want to tell you a little bit about the bundle. Now this is, up to now it has been easy in a way. So what happens with this vector bundle, right, on X. So again, supersymmetry, right, imposes strong constraints. And what we have is that this Yang-Mills field strength, which is a two form, has a zero two part and a two zero part, and this has to vanish. And these contracted with this form with the indices raised is zero, right? In other words, there must exist a Hermitian Yang-Mills connection on X. Let's find that. A while ago, Uhlenbeck, Yao, Donaldson wrote a very beautiful theorem about the existence of this, and they said the following: a stable, I'll say intuitively what this means in a moment, holomorphic vector bundle over a compact Kähler. I'm going to leave that line empty there. Compact Kähler manifold admits a unique Hermitian Yang-Mills connection. Okay, so that means that in the case of Calabi-Yau, we can search for stable holomorphic bundles, whatever stable means, I'll say in a moment. And once we find one, we know that they have a unique, that once we find that we know they have a unique solution. to these equations, right? So this stability condition, so why do we have, it has this constraint, right? So it looks like this doesn't work for the general case on the heterotic, right? So this, the stability, intuitively, very, very roughly, right, has to do with a concept on the bundle called the slope of V, right, which is defined as an integral over the manifold of the first chain class of V, which is omega squared. So, and this slope, as defined like this, there is a factor in front, which at this moment we don't care about it, it depends only on the Kähler form, the class of the Kähler form, when x is, when x, for x scalar. Right. So the stability is the idea that this slope is in some sense bigger than the slope of each of its submanifolds. Right. So the question is, how do we construct, what do we know about, what do we know about the existence of solutions to these equations in the case in which we have, in which don't, we don't have a Kähler manifold? And what happens is that Li and Yao, so I can erase this, Li and Yao in 1987 actually generalized this. So you only need the space to be complex. And with a mild, I won't describe this, a mild condition on the metric, right? So if you replace Kähler with this, and this mild condition, what matters to us is that this mild condition includes conformally balanced manifolds, right? So in this, in for Calabi-Yau with torsion cases, right, this concept was, this theorem was generalized T7 by Li and Yao. And of course they had to generalize, they had to do a bit of work generalizing the idea of stability and the idea of slope, right? Because now you don't have a Kähler, but you still have omega, but the omega is not, you don't have a class, a cohomology class associated to it anymore. But the fact is that they did. And with those modifications, the theorem applies. So we have an existence theorem. So again, one can try to look for stable holomorphic vector bundles over your complex balanced manifold, right? Of course, it's easy to say it. The key is that it's omega squared, actually. The slope for the for sorry, I misspoke here. So bundles. Thank you. Right. Sorry, that was I misspoke. So bundles with so bundle there. Thank you. So
does it just replace omega squared with this omega squared times e to the 2
phi? Basically yes, but it's more complicated than that because you have to show this slope has to make sense in some analogous of a class here, something analogous to this class. Right, so it's not trivial. Right, what happens is that you see this defines a closed four form. What defines a class is this object here. Right. And that's what's using the slope.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Inserted instead of slope.
The proof. I have a copy of the paper, but it's not. I'm not sure what I can say that will be enlightening from following the proof.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So and at last, of course, we have we know something about B, at least we have an existence theorem. Finding these bundles is a big headache. I mean, the people have been doing it in Calabria, and it wasn't as hard enough there. The stability condition is very tough. And I mean, there are many constructions, and it's not known whether you actually have a stable bundle. So one would expect the same problems in this case, right? But there is one more problem, one more condition, which is the Bianchi identity, which is as a differential equation is actually quite horrible. Right, so this is a condition that involves both x and v, right, and involves h, and there's an alpha prime there. Now notice that I want to call this Rh before I had the Ricci form of the Bismuth connection, right, here was vanishing, and we had this connection, right, with a plus sign here. Now the Bianchi identity contains a different connection. I'm going to call this is with respect to a connection. It's a minus sign there. And the H is for whole. The whole connection. I think it was James Parks and Dario Martelli, the first who started calling this the whole connection, but I'm not sure. But the point is that he wrote this down as far back as 1986. And this connection is also metric, but doesn't preserve, but is not Hermitian, right? Doesn't preserve the complex structure. But it is the connection that you need to have there if the supersymmetry conditions together with the Bianchi identity are going to imply the equations of motion. Okay? So SUSY plus equations of motion. So if you can solve all that. So, and if you think finding stable bundles is hard, this is just horrible, even for simple examples. Okay, so remarks before I go on to the connectedness of these spaces. The case of the Calabi-Yau case, right, even with the complications, there's quite a lot known, right? There are lots of examples. The Calabi-Yau case, there are lots of examples. And nowadays there are lots of examples. There are lots of examples including bundles. Right? The most basic question you can ask about these spaces, which is about these compactifications, which is say the Masler spectrum, right? If you want to start asking physics questions, right? Is known, at least to a point. I mean it's related to cohomology classes. At least it boils down to some computation, right? That nowadays is being remarkably successful using computers, right? The moduli spaces, so this is well known up to a point. So you know the moduli space for a Calabi-Yau, but the moduli space of the vector bundle of the Calabi-Yau is not well understood. So that's an open problem. So the full moduli space is not well understood. And there are questions, I mean, when you, apart from if your vector bundle is a tangent bundle, then things are easy and you can talk, say, about mirror symmetry, but the concept of mirror symmetry here is again not clear, though there is some work that has been done already there. Now, for the Calabi-Yau with torsion, there are examples, right? As I said, I don't want to focus on describing this today. There are attempts to describe bundles on this, but it's very, very difficult because of all the equations. And there is no clue on what the spectrum, matter spectrum is. Right? Because your Dirac equation now contains distortion. And it's a difficult question to answer. And and moduli, well, again, no idea. Again, there is some work that has been done there, but it's incomplete. There's also something a bit scary about this, because once you don't have a Kähler manifold, you think you will lose all your tools in algebraic geometry, right? Because nobody has done this. You see, in the Calabria case, the solutions to this are in one-to-one correspondence with these cohomology classes. But you cannot, you don't have a cohomologies here associated to this equation. Right? You have something that contains distortion. Right? And this is work very much in progress. In the math literature, right? There is something about this, but there is nothing that can be used at the time.
So you need to know the metric?
Sorry?
You need to know the metric?
Interesting. To solve this equation?
Yes. Naively, yes.
Well, there is always the. I think so, actually. What confused me is that, of course, one can have a connection without having a metric.
You just need to know the proper forms to expand on. Before, they were the forms that come from cohomology. Now you don't know what generalizes that. But people make ansatz for that, and then you can still derive some effective action or something. So, but the question is, what are the proper forms to expand, say, this J and omega? So then the coefficients in front of those forms need to be the Kähler modulus. But because you don't know what is the proper generalization of cohomology, it's not clear whether the expansions that people use and assume them, whether they're really the right ones or not in the right modulus space.
But the other point is that I don't actually know. But it might be possible, sorry, if you think just in terms of pure mathematics, probably you can say I have a manifold that needs spinners and I can write your. But you do need the Clifford algebra, right? So possibly, I think, I don't know. The answer is I don't know, but I think you might. Anyway, so. Okay, so this is open, as I said. So what I've really been wanting to do and been trying to do is to try to learn something by asking whether one can start with a Calabria and get to sort one of these solutions with torsion through some geometric transition. So I'm going to start with the flops, and if I have time, I will tell you something about the conifolds. The conifolds to do something about conifold transitions, you have to know something about the moduli space, and I'll mention why in a moment. So this is sort of geometric transitions. Particularly from Calabria manifolds, right? So what I would do is to consider, I'm going to consider a question that is related to a conjecture in mathematics called Myers-Reed conjecture. Um, right? This was, I think this is in the early 90s. So the question I want to ask is the following. So what is the class? What class of complex what class of Calabi-Yau with torsion manifolds can be connected to each other? By a geometric transition, like, say, a flop or a pony for transition, right, Miles Reeves actually posed this conjecture in particular for conical transition, right? So this is a question that is related perhaps to the landscape, right? I don't usually talk about it like that, but perhaps to make some connection to what Philip was saying in his talk the other day, right? He had landscape of Calabi-Yau manifolds. So this is all Calabi-Yau, the torsion there. And here you have the torsion number of massless fields, and you have the number of generations, or two times generations. So this is H11 minus H12 has a factor of 2, this axis. Right, so there were a bunch of points here, right? A bunch of points in this landscape. But something I've been trying to convince him to do is to put the points on this line, right? On that. So, and he mentioned how these Calabi-Yaus are connected to each other by transition, by conical transitions, right? So, on that line, right, the line in which H12 is zero, those are called rigid Calabi-Yau manifolds, and there are in fact examples down there. So actually, I'm not sure how far down this goes. But so what happens on this line? This line will have H11 equals to zero, but we know that for a Calabi-Yau, H11 is the norm, is the number of Keeler class parameters, has to be bigger or equal to 1. So you don't have Calabi-Yau manifold there, right? However, there are objects that are connected to Calabi-Yau manifolds by conical transitions from rigid manifolds that can take you from one of these to another one there. Right. So I think it's only fair to have them there. And the objects here look like connected sums of S3 equals S3 things, a number of those. So this is useless. I mean, you can stare at it. It doesn't, as far as I know, it's the properties of what these objects have that would be interesting, right? And then, in fact, these things have H2 equals to zero, right? So the question is whether one can actually go beyond this. This is an old story. This transition that that was done by Liu and Tian in the 90s. That's the way they discovered, by doing these conifold transitions, they discovered that these objects on this line have complex structures. It's not obvious why they should be complex, but they are complex. And one can prove on top of that they are balanced. Right. So one still needs to do more work to show that these will be solutions of heterogeneous compactifications. Ah, that's complicated, actually. What they do is they start with the quintic, and they go to a rigid manifold, and then they do something else, and they go to one of those. But the paper is quite, is readable actually. It's actually quite nice. So but this is not just, actually, I said something wrong. It's not just kind of, this procedure, I don't know why one can go directly from the quintic to one of these. But this transition involves both a conical transition and involves blowing of Prussian curves. Right, so conical transitions and the reverse of the conical transition. Okay, so that's my way of motivation, how one can ask this question, right? But there are, of course, you expect to have also spaces that are non-Kähler that still have h on 1 non-zero, right? So that's also possible. So another, before I go on to tell you all the plots, actually, I want to say something else, that mathematically, one can do this, one can do flops and get perhaps solutions of that type, and one can learn a bit about the moduli space, but I have no clue what the physics is. Like there is, as far as I know, for the heterotic string, there is it is not well understood physically how the transition happens. I mean, there is no analog really of the mechanism that Strominger wrote about in the 90s, right? You have deep brains that wrap vanishing cycles and blah, blah, blah. And it's actually quite beautiful, but there are no deep brains here to begin with, right? You have five brains and you have two brains, and you have to play with that and see what, so the physics of this question is also open. So let's see how much time I have. Okay, so I'll tell you.
Has anybody looked at like the strong coupling limit of these transitions of possibility going to heterotic M theory event?
I don't know, actually. So I don't know. So I'll tell you quickly what happens with the flops. So the flops, right. So I think this is perhaps the simplest way to create a Calabi-Yau with torsion, perhaps, right? So suppose you start with some singular, say a Calabi-Yau manifold that has some ordinary double points, right? So your Calabi-Yau has some ordinary double points right there. And if you zoom in one of these, right, look at the neighborhood of the singularity. I mean, the picture that you can have in mind is that this is a complex, the neighborhood of each of the singularities, it looks like a complex cone over P1 cross P1, right? So the point is that you can do a small resolution of those singularities in two ways. Right, what you do is that you blow up that point with a P1 cross a P1. You replace the point, right, with a P1 cross a P1. And then you contract one of these. So this is again a P1 cross a P1. You contract one of these P1s, and you get a picture like this, right? P1, P1, P1. Or you contract the other, and you get the other picture, right? The other P1 cross P1. And these are called small resolutions of that singularity. And these two are called a flop of each other. Right? So what you are doing, in fact, so your small resolution can take you. So if I call this neighborhood W, right, sharp, what has happened is that you can resolve that in two ways, right? And we call one the flop of the other, right? And what you have is that this one is related to that one by contracting this rational curve, and then replacing the singular point by this other rational curve. Right? So of course this is just a picture. Not too difficult to put equations into all of this. Okay, so the point of what I want to say is that a generic flop, say take your favorite quintic, yeah, and take your favorite rational curve in your favorite quintic and flop it, right? So it's a generic flop in a Calabi-Yau, say x prime, gives a manifold x, which is not Taylor. Right. However, C1 is preserved, and this was proved by Atiyah as far back as 1958. That's an old result. So you still preserve the fact that the first chain class vanishes, but it has also been proven that X is balanced. And this is, the flop is just an example of what's called, I don't know if I want to get into that, but this is just an example of a manifold. This new manifold is what's called a manifold that is bimeromorphic to X prime. And all manifolds that are bimeromorphic to a Kähler manifold are balanced. And that's a result, yeah? The metrics without torsion, there are lots of them, right? Metrics with torsion, there is some work has been done, including this work by Martelli and Sparks. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. So this is an example of a more general result that in mathematics, that is also a result in the 90s, 1993. I mean, that given a Kähler manifold, there are some modifications that you can do to this manifold and get something that preserves both the first chain class and the balance condition. So the flop is the simplest one and one that we can understand. So there is potential here. So I haven't gotten anywhere to what I'm in fact doing. I mean, all this is in the literature somehow. Right, so part of the work I have in progress is that you can start with a Calabi-Yau that is a hypersurface in a toric variety, and you can describe these flops in terms of the polytop of your variety. And there is a condition that on this polytop that is equivalent to your space being Kähler. And the way what I've been wanting to do is to relax that condition on that polytop. For those who know toric geometry, this condition is called the regularity of the polytop. So what I'm looking for is for these toric varieties that are polytops which are not regular, and they give you flops of Calabi-Yau manifolds which are balanced. So that gives you a huge number of balanced manifolds that are connected to this points here by a flop, but just a simple flop, right? So, of course, that's not good enough, right? We have their balance, but what happens, they have balance in first chain class, and what happens to this and the Bianchi identity and so on. So there's quite a lot of work, and what I said is the easy part, really. I mean, even though, so what happens to the torsion, for example? What happens to H? I mean, I started with a Calabi-Yau, there is no H there, and I flopped. I flopped a rational curve, and now I say there is a flux, right? So what is happening there is that these flux might be localized on the flop rational curve. I have no idea what to do with the Bianchi identity, right? Or how to construct a bundle. And so I want to finish with another open problem, right? The physics of the transition on X is unknown, though mathematically I can do some transition, right? But there is another question. What happens with the bundle? Like, if I have a clavier with a bundle here, what happens when I do these transitions to the bundle? Right? How do I know? How do I do what we like to call a transgression? How do we move the bundle from the clavier, right? So a solution on a clavier through the flop so that I have a solution of Strominger's equation on the other side. So, and the general understanding of the transgression, even within clavier manifolds, so even moving within clavier manifolds, is something that is not well understood either. So there is quite a number of questions here also. Open, right. So I think I'll stop here. I could go on. I think I've said quite a lot today. So thank you.
Questions?
So how much can you say about the modular space of this balanced manifold that you get from the flop?
How much can I say about?
The modular space.
Okay.
Because that was the main issue.
The moduli space is very, I mean, let's focus first on the moduli space of just X, right? Forget the bundle. Right, for some time, right?
Yeah, so, or the bundle you cannot address before it's three.
I mean, even so with the Calabria case, it's not so clear how to describe. Another approach that I didn't begin to mention here is, of course, the approach using linear sigma models, right? People have been writing linear sigma models proportionally. And that may be useful in terms of moduli. But all I know about the moduli is the following. And that's rather important, actually. You know that a Kähler manifold, if you deform the complex structure of a Kähler manifold, you get a Kähler manifold, right? It's an all resolved by the collider, Spencer collider. Now, if you take a balanced manifold and you deform the complex structure a little, you are likely to break it. So that means that the class of spaces that are balanced are not stable under deformations, or the small deformations of the complex structure. So that's. I mean, if you want to talk about moduli, one has to ask the following question, right? What extra condition do I need to have a class of a stable class of solutions? Right? And you can take the other attitude. If you have a solution to these equations, right, that is balanced, and when you deform if you change a little bit the complex structure and you break that condition, then you don't have a solution anymore, and that means that you don't have complex structure parameters.
Yeah, but the question should not be how to deform the complex structure. The question should be how to deform the balance conditions. So
that's right. Exactly. So I agree. So, but I'll tell you what I thought.
So, yeah, the moduli.
I'll tell you what. So that's one point, right? So the deformation of the balance condition was something that was work. There's some work has already been done by Yao, Becker, I think Kathleen Becker, and Tseng maybe. And then what they did is that if I fix the complex structure, right, what happens if I deform this balance condition, right? And they got some equations, but they are not, it's not clear what they mean. Right? So there is something in the literature that I don't understand the meaning of that. As I said, with some equations, no clue what the physics of that would be either. So that's what that work, together with what I just said, is. Those are two points, and then there is a third one, which is some work that has been done by a student, some published very very strange by a student of Yao, 2006. Chung Wu. What she did is to to try to find this extra condition, so what happens when you do a small deformation of this complex structure. And what she found is, she did find a condition, actually, it's called space that needs to satisfy the dilemma. But I mean, I know mathematically, I can give you, I mean, talk to you for some time what that means mathematically. No idea what it means in physics. Right? What else do I know? I mean, essentially, at least in bits, let me make it possible. Right? So the question is, what to do with that? And you do, for example, to discuss conical transitions, you do need to know what to do with complex structural deformations. Because you cannot say that you are going to start with a singular space and replace these noble double singularities with three spheres, because that corresponds to the deformation of the complex structure. And you cannot say do anything unless you know what happens. And again, there is quite a bit in the math literature, including Friedman and Wu, discussing that. But there is no full picture. Yeah?
What is known about which flab AR manifolds admit these flaps and how many different flaps they, different types of flaps?
Oh, I mean, Calabi-Yau manifolds have rational curves.
Everyone admits.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, generically they do, and many of them.
Many.
Yeah. So you can do for the quintic, for example, you can do thousands of for blocks. It's actually it's quite astonishing. Actually, one can do that. I mean, the question is which blocks give you a new Kähler manifold, a new Calabi-Yau manifold, which blocks do not. And again, there are conditions in mathematics that tell you which ones will give you Calabi-Yau, which ones will not. But this generically, you can do this Calabi-Yau have this.
So potentially you could get thousands of new.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it. But again, I mean, also a point, I know they're balanced, and I know that the first condition, the other equations that it's not, so it doesn't have what to do with it.
Also, when you do get one of these, what is known about the stability? Not in the sense you're talking about, but just like, is there a positive energy theorem, or is there something that would guarantee physical stability of that solution?
I don't know. Yeah.
Are there some examples known, maybe?
About these spaces?
Yeah, where they're stable or unstable.
And this is all, most of it, I mean, some of it is in the physical literature, but the majority of the examples I know of are I learned from the math literature. Right. So some of them are, for example, torus vibrations T2 over K3 surfaces, for example. And they, you do it in such a way that you have solutions that are not Kähler, right?
So has anyone studied?
Yeah, Gauss vectors were a lot of those examples. Trying to put bundles showing that there are solutions, that there are bundles in these too. I mean, so, yeah, so I don't know whether those could be related by any transition to this, for example, to Calabi-Yaus. And in the physics literature, there are some, the first examples actually were constructed using a chain of dualities. But I don't know about any stability theory.
Has anyone done just like linearized stability analysis?
Sorry. No. No.
You're getting balanced as opposed to conformally balanced.
So if you have a conformally balanced manifold, you can say that it has a balanced metric if you put the e to the 2-point front. Right, so the metric, so if you, and you have something similar for the metric, the metric with the tilde is balanced. So
do you know about dilaton from this? Do you know anything about dilaton?
The dilaton enters in together with omega in the equations.
And also together with small omega.
Sorry? this is going to enter together with the capital omega, and then there is actually a relation that has to do with this torsion class that we mentioned before. It's a relation that you can that you can obtain from these equations. I can't remember the factor here, but there is this is related to some contraction of omega with itself. Of that sort, with some factors here. And this is minus 2 here.
If there are no questions, let us sum this
up. Sorry, this is a very general question, but why do you say that we talk about the physics is open?
Oh,
why do you call it the physics?
No,
I mean, isn't like
in this case I meant when it, in the transitions I meant the analog of the physical interpretation of the conical transition in the type 2 theories, right? In which you can have these transitions mathematically. You can shrink cycles and blow up points and whatever. But within your string theory you have an interpretation of what's happening. Right, but you have brains wrapping these cycles that vanish and that produces massless states on the other side and so on. So that was the first person who did this was Strominger in the mid 90s, and there is no analog for the heterotic theory on Calabria or otherwise for this mechanism within the industry. Yeah, so you have brains that will become massless, right? As these vanishing cycles, as these cycles collapse to a point, right? So it's a very beautiful mechanism, but nothing like that yet. So by the physics, I meant the analog of that mechanism for the heterotic, not just the mathematics. You see, even in the type 2 theory, mathematically, the conical transitions were actually known before, right? But I worked by Philip and Hoopsch but it was what was lacking was that interpretation in string theory, in physical theory.
The new Tiami transition, does it give a duality of equivalence? Yes.
Well, it's one of these geometric transitions that takes you from one heterotic theory to another.
Which is not equivalent.
Which no, because it will be a heterotic. You start with a heterotic on a Calabria with some vector bundle, and you will end up with some heterotic on some Calabria with torsion with some other vector bundle.
No, the question is whether the mass spectrum are the same.
Right. So that was, in fact, a question that was problematic in the type 2 theories before the work by Strominger, right? That in that case, it was known the massless spectrum on a theory, and if you take the theory on a Calabria into a quantum transition, then the massless spectrum looked different. But it was Strominger actually who understood that in terms of you have to think, you have to put in the brains. I understand that. Okay, I don't know what the mass spectrum is inside. Well, I know the Calabria.
Let us sum this bit early.